everyone an overview of the purpose of our meeting. The meeting today is to gather information, ask questions, and have board discussion regarding the budget for the upcoming school year. We are going to be voting on the budget on either May 6th next week or May 11th, depending upon how much information or how far we get in our discussions. And again, the purpose of the meeting this evening is to gather as much information as we need as a board in order to make budget decisions. We are not, there has been some discussion on amendments. We are not specifically going to be voting on individual amendments tonight because we really have to next week vote on the accepting the entire budget first before we can amend it. But we are going to be making or having discussions this evening on a number of the amendments that have been brought forward by the board and the administration, and we will have discussions on moving the amendments forward or not to either the meeting on the 6th or the 11th for vote when we're talking about the entire budget. So we will be making motions at the end on the amendments, and again, that will be to move them forward or not when we can vote in the context of the bigger budget next week or the following week. So the agenda for this evening is going to be board member questions on the budget. Then we're going to get into discussion of any potential budget amendments, any voting on moving the amendments forward, and then next steps. So the superintendent is here with a number of people very well informed about the budget. And we will start off with questions. So if any board members have questions on the budget that's not specific to the individual amendments that have been brought forward, now would be the time to have that discussion. Anyone? Oh, Ms. Mathiak?
I know you're stunned, shocked, I dare say. This is a really dumb question, and I can't tell if this was an oversight or what, but as I looked through the budget summaries for the different departments, I noticed that in the far right column where it says change, it's always zero, even when the number of FTEs and the dollar amounts is going up or down. And I'm not sure I understood that. Where you have the summaries by department, you want me to walk over? I can just walk over and show you. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you can see. I mean, it's right there.
Right. It's the one I grabbed.
Increase, decrease,
so
all like that.
It's the change from cost to continue to balance.
Could you talk into the microphone?
The increase decrease column is the change between cost to continue and balanced budget.
But it's that way even when there is a change.
So
the one that I looked at most closely was teaching and learning, which is where I came. So how does this work? Okay, what it's
so that one, so let me look at teaching and learning.
Yeah. Or I could just ask you another time too. It's in the ones that are sideways.
Sideways.
Yeah. I'll show you. It's up here.
Which is also out of these, okay. They're just the other way.
So I guess that is the same. Okay.
So they'd be the same chart,
so
they just turned.
Okay. Never mind. I've got it. I get it now.
Could you what was the answer?
The answer is there is no increase or decrease between the cost to continue number and the balanced budget.
In those areas, yep.
Yeah.
We just looked at another area and there was a change.
Yeah.
Next year, the 910. So that the list of 3,927,000, you would see those areas, you would see those changes.
Okay. Mr. Hughes.
Thank you. I have a question for the superintendent. I know there are a lot of different initiatives and kind of irons in the fire with respect to proposals that may be coming to us over the course of the next budget year, and those include Fine Arts Task Force and more with the Math Task Force, and I believe that you had mentioned that there was you might have a TAG plan coming. Are there? Can you just kind of lay the landscape for us in terms of what different proposals you see coming over the next year that may have an impact on the budget that we may not be in a position to fully assess at the moment?
Certainly. Well, I think the majority of the future impact will come through the proposed strategic plan. I mean, that's how we have cast this as a way of looking at priorities going forward. And so, you know, that will be the future roadmap once it's, you know, that report is presented to you. You have a chance to review it, and then it becomes approved, and that's you know, how we live going forward over the next many years. Having said that, we also know that at times other priorities can emerge that haven't been thought of as part of the strategic plan, so we have to have a kind of a dynamic view of that plan because new issues may come up that cause us to have to respond around the learning needs of our kids in particular. Mm-hmm. Having said that, the additional things that I can point out are the math task force. And the idea behind the proposal in this budget was to begin some of that work, knowing that there would be additional funds needed to fully implement the recommendations over time. The same is true with the Fine Arts Task Force. And then the other thing I will point out just in reinforcement is it's my intent to bring you a talented and gifted plan in June of this year. Those are the big areas as I sit here tonight, and the biggest, obviously, is the future around the strategic plan.
There's also the proposed technology plan.
I'm sorry, that's correct. That's correct.
There's several recommendations in there that would be a significant expense. How do we accommodate those things that we see on the horizon in this budget?
Well, I think the extent to which I'm asking you to consider the future is around those three line items for the math task force, fine arts task force, and the strategic plan. There are those placeholder amounts. The strategic plan will be broken into priorities 1, 2, and 3, which means what priority 1 is where you begin first, if that's acceptable. Generally thought about in terms of year 1, year 2, year 3. But also, given there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen with state funding, and while this would not be my desire, we also have to be open to the idea that it may be more than 3 years. But at least we'll have a roadmap that we can say, well, this is of all the priority ones, this percent of them we can propose in the following year budget. And so we use that as kind of our gauge in terms of what's next, and then what's behind that, and then what's behind that. But again, those priorities are broken into 1, 2s, and 3s for that purpose, and the only caveat is there's times where all of that can't be done just because of the finances that are available, but at least there's an attempt to define for the future what the priorities are.
Thank you.
Ms. Moss.
Okay, just to follow up on what Mr. Hughes was asking, I mean, there are so many things coming up over the next few months. The task force reports and also the stimulus money. And I was wondering, as far as especially the technology plan, is that something that you see having a good idea of where you want to go by the time we need to use that money up? Or I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, same thing with Mr. Hughes, the budget is coming within this budget. It's really difficult to know how much money would need to be allocated towards certain departments because of that possibility. I mean, that's a large amount of money coming in for those 2 years, for those one-time expenditures. And I also, that kind of follows up on to my, or continues on to my question about sustainability. I'm wondering, I know that you've said that you want the next year to look at the sustainability of reverting back to taking away the class and a half for the elementary schools. And I was wondering if you just could just give us, do you have any ideas right now, any thoughts about what, where that could possibly come from after this coming year, after we use the TIF money and then the money from the fund balance?
Yeah.
Do you want to do that now or as part of the amendment discussion on that specific item?
If Ms. Moss is comfortable, I would prefer around that discussion.
Okay.
But I can talk a little bit about, just briefly, sustainability around the plan that we would develop for the stimulus money. First of all, we have not drawn any conclusions, but we're in putting the plan together, we're going to follow a set of criteria that hopefully in the majority of cases would help us avoid that cliff at the end of the 2 years. I'm not saying that we can avoid that entirely, but time will tell based on what the plan is that we put together. But I can tell you that one of the things that we're clearly trying to focus on are those one-time expenditures. And while we haven't said it would be specifically for technology, that's an area that should be looked at. But there are also some technology grants, you know, aside from the Title I and the IDEA money that should be pursued by the district. We should look at all of those as possibilities at least. And the other thing, just I guess to remind ourselves, is one, I want to be very clear because I'm not, this is not a proposal, this is just, you know, what's been done in the past is, you know, the use of technology, you know, dealing with technology around future referenda. I mean, that's just one option that should be looked at. But again, I want to emphasize, we have not gotten anywhere near drawing that conclusion other than to say that there are various options out there for addressing those kinds of needs going forward.
Sorry, I was wondering if I was going ahead of the game there asking the amendment question. Excuse me.
Yeah, I think we'll get through, because I think my understanding is people have some questions they want to ask that may affect their amendment discussion, so we'll go through the questions first, if that's okay. I have a couple of questions, and followed by Ms. Passman. I want to talk about the bond rating. So we're still, now we're double A bond rating, correct? What would it take to get back to our AAA bond rating, and what advantages is there in doing so? Or are you comfortable, I guess, where we are? Should we be focused as we do financial planning on getting back to AAA?
I think so. I think that the AAA, I think we've talked about this before, is probably more important right now in today's market than it ever has been. And the reason for that is through this market crisis, and the reason why it came about is bond insurers were insuring bad products, you know, subprime mortgages and things of that nature. So there is no more insurance that will do what's called wrap a municipal bond issue. So when we would enter the market, we would create ourselves as a AAA because we would pay a little bit higher of an interest rate to have a bond insurer come in and say, I guarantee that Madison Metropolitan School District will repay that bond. If they do not, I will repay that bond to you, Mr. and Mrs. Investor out in the marketplace. With those companies no longer in business, a AAA rating is very highly looked at and sought out by an investor. So not only will it help you get a lower interest rate, but you'll also have more people bidding on your bond issue when you do issue that. So kind of getting back to the crux of your question is, should we be looking at utilizing fund balance? How important is that? I think it's very important, and when Moody's, who does our rating, looks at us, they look at two major components. How are you balancing your budget, and are you doing that on the backs of using your fund balance or equity at the end of the year? And also, what is your outlook? And our outlook is pretty stable right now, at least for the next 3 years due to that referendum. So I think that to answer your question, I'm comfortable that we can still look at, which I want to, getting our upgrade to a AAA and still do some of the things that Dr. Neerad is going to be talking about and I think the board is going to be looking at. We did add $4 million to fund balance last year. And as we go through this, we're starting to project a possible positive cash flow at the end of this school year. We're not 100% certain, and we're going to look at doing something in June around where we project that to be. But those things coupled to, you know, a three-year outlook of us having roughly a balanced budget with a you know, $400,000 need to reduce programs and services maybe over 2 years is very, you know, highly regarded by someone like Moody's. So I think even using some of that going forward, albeit a small amount, is a little bit of a negative, but I think we can overcome it by our outlook as far as balancing our budgets over the next couple of years.
Thank you. And my other question, when we went to referendum, we made an assumption about the value of property value. And has that held true? Or where are we with that?
We don't know where we're going to be with that until the fall. What you have in front of you and within your budget book is a preliminary tax rate. And to calculate that preliminary tax rate, we're assuming that property values will increase by 4%. And a lot of times people falsely equate that to my home value is not increasing in assessed value. Assessed value for all the properties within our school district boundaries is so much more than everybody's home. It's all the commercial properties. It's new infrastructure going in. TIFs coming back on the books, all of which is growing here in Madison. I think recently it was either the city assessor or someone was quoted as saying that residential is basically zero and commercial is between 1% and 2%. Our 4%, I'm still pretty confident, and this was laid in the groundwork of our referendum, I'm still pretty confident that we're hovering right around that. Working with the city and some of the good news around the TIF money coming to us is more property value that was not counted in 2008, for the 2009 year. So that's all new value that's added on top of even stable growth will give you an increment of increase. So I still believe that, you know, we have a conservative and, as far as I'm concerned, a decently accurate as you can be in this type of market. Again, this is preliminary, and it's simply what we're projecting those to be at this point in time.
So if it changes dramatically in the fall by a couple of percentage points, then we make that adjustment.
Exactly.
In the October budget, is that how that works?
Exactly. I mean, we're projecting a preliminary property tax levy. Again, that's balanced by the governor's budget not even being done now. And that factors into our preliminary tax rate, which is, you know, vetted in a 4% increase in property values. A good way to think of it is, you know, any way it would fluctuate. When we do these presentations, we're roughly showing a penny on the tax rate. And that means $2.50 on a $250,000 home on our tax rate from 08-09 school year to 2009-10. If those property values were to go down by 1% or up by 1%, that's roughly $22.50 either way. So if property values come in at 3%, that would be a roughly increase in $25 on a $250,000 home. And I understand that $25 is $25, but I do believe that that is still a very small increment of an increase for our school district in going to referendum and being successful, being half of that. So I think that just to frame that, it's about $22 either way, if that makes sense, depending on where property values come in. But again, that doesn't become final until October, so we're 6 months ahead of that right now.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Passman?
My question was on technology, and I think Beth already answered that, and so did the superintendent, so I'm fine.
Thank you. Ms. Mathiak?
I have a question for the superintendent about the earmarks that we have as set-asides for the various task forces and planning processes that are underway but not completed. Especially when I look at the dollar amount that's set aside for the strategic planning, mm-hmm. It doesn't look like a lot. Mm-hmm. Is it your sense that if something needed to happen, it would come back to the board as a request to revise to amend the budget?
Before the strategic plan?
After the strategic plan is brought forward, if there's something that comes up between now and September or October, then you'd be coming back and we'd need the 5 votes to approve the amend the change.
Right. That's how I'm looking at it. You know, what I'm trying to cast for your consideration is with the math and the fine arts, and I know you know this, but for our public, that if we didn't allocate resources, it would be fully 2 years before we thought about doing any of those recommendations. So I'm trying to have us avoid that. With the understanding in all three areas, if there is support for what for those amounts or other amounts, that I would come back with specific plans once those were defined.
And then if there are the five votes by members of the board, then that could be implemented during the coming year. Otherwise, it waits a year?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Ready to move to the amendments?
Okay, in the binder that was at your place when you came in,
shift here.
At the end of the binder, there are three amendments. Two were made by Ms. Cole, and the amendment we'll start with is the amendment on the class and a half. And Ms. Mathak?
I just have an informational question on amendments. Are we limited to only those that are in the binder?
No.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I did not make that clear. We'll start with the ones in the binder. Then if there are others, we can do that. We'll start off with the one dealing with the class and a half. And before I turn it over to the superintendent to explain the amendments that were recommended in through his update, I just wanted to, say something to the community that these amendments are coming through regarding the class size for class and a half for the music, fine arts, phys ed, and reach. And I guess the message before turning it over to the superintendent that I want to let people know is that I think these amendments coming forward from the superintendent has really been a group effort. There has been a lot of feedback by people on the board to the superintendent asking for he and staff to look at ways of seeing if this was possible, changing the current situation in the SAGE schools and not moving forward with class and a half in the non-SAGE schools. So there was a lot of effort by, I think, all members of the board in talking with the superintendent and in talking with the community and, you know, providing feedback. So I just wanted people to be aware that I would view this more as a group amendment than not. And so with that, I will turn it over to the superintendent. And I do want to thank you and Mr. Cass and everyone involved for providing us with this good information for discussion tonight. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Let me provide some background information relative to this issue, and then obviously we want to respond to any questions that you have following that. This has been an issue that has been part of my thinking since I've come here. You know, I have had a lot of teachers, a lot of parents discuss as I visited our schools. They're concerned with this instructional design around the class and a half. And for our public, what that means is, particularly in our SAGE schools, for a couple of years, the classes would be combined for the purposes of instruction in the areas of arts, music, physical education, and reach. And as I said a month ago in a communication to you, I believe that our staff have worked to make that happen, to deliver a quality design as best as they could. But it was very clear to me from an educational policy perspective that there were significant problems with the class and a half framework. And so beginning to think about that, especially around what we were proposing to do for the non-SAGE schools and having the effect of creating additional class and a half, it was apparent to me that we should take a look at an option of dealing with that problem in a more defined way. And that's what we've been working on, and I have had a lot of communications with you in terms of the things that, you've had questions and concerns about. And I've tried to incorporate a recommendation that is responsive to all the concerns, that have been expressed on this particular issue. So what I did, again, the board is obviously aware of this, is in the April committee meetings, we brought to you a document relative to the class and a half. And at that point in time, you know, we provided three options for your consideration relative to the change that was being considered for the non-SAIDE schools. But as I looked at, continue to look at this issue, it seemed to me that we should try to find an option that, a plan, I should say, that would resolve this problem, which, as you well know, had been implemented for budgetary reasons. You know, and, you know, I think everyone that I've talked to has said, you know, they understand that this was not, you know, the preferred educational design, but obviously under the revenue caps, you know, decisions have had to be made here about how you can deal with resources going forward. So we understand that this was done for budgetary purposes, which most districts have had to face these kinds of issues. What I also cast last month was the idea that we'd come up with a long-range plan for 2010-11, meaning a year from this fall. But the more I continue to look at this issue, you know, I came to the conclusion that if there was a way to address this issue now, that we should think about that possibility. So with that idea in mind, I want to communicate the following. What we have provided to you in listening to your questions and concerns is a recommendation that would allow the disbanding of the class and a half in all of our schools for next school year. And that would involve, again, those four areas of art, music, reach, and physical education. And what I committed to doing was to try to find the funding source for that, because obviously that's critically important. And I'll try to address this, the sustainability issue as part of this fairly brief presentation. What I'm suggesting to you for your consideration, after listening to all of you and all the feedback that we've received, is a funding plan that would consist of the following. Just last week, we learned that, and Eric can explain this in more detail, that there will, in fact, be an additional funding amount of $700,000 through the closing of, is it three TIFs, Eric?
Three to five,
yeah, about that number. So knowing that to eliminate all the class and a half, to maintain the low class sizes in the non-SAIDE schools in K-1, that the total dollar amount is $1.2 million, of which I'm recommending through the amendment for your consideration that $700,000 would be arrived at through the closing of the TIFs, and the addition would come through about $580,000 through the use of the fund balance that Eric discussed earlier. I want to remind all of us that originally we were projecting a $2 million use of that fund balance to come up with this year's budget. And prior to what I'm just communicating to you, this budget plan had no use of those funds. And so, you know, there were $4 million at the end of last school year. This would still allow, if that was the board's option, it's your prerogative to do whatever you wish, but if there was no additions taken from that fund balance, there would still be near $3.5 million remaining in fund balance with this option. Again, I want to be very clear, it's your prerogative, you know, to do other things if that's your desire. We're recommending a $580,000 use of that fund balance to go with the closing of the TIF to accomplish the elimination of the class and a half for your consideration. I want to reinforce what Arlene said, and that is that I have viewed my interest around this being a public an educational policy issue, but I tried to listen to your concerns as you've listened to concerns of our staff in assembling this recommendation. I just want to mention one other piece, and then we'd be glad to answer any questions. Well, let me do two things. Around the sustainability question, my feeling is that if it is a desire of the Board of Education to advance an amendment that would eliminate the class and a half in all the elementary schools, that we do so with the understanding that it must be sustained, because it would be very disconcerting to all of us, I believe, and I'll speak for myself, for me, to have to face a change in that a year from now. So here's what I'm communicating to you, is that if I've heard you correctly and I've heard our educational community correctly on this, that I think what we're doing here is making a commitment to sustain it, which means that we'll have to look at other budgets to carry this forward, and we will come up with a plan. Eric and I have talked about this, that we would come up with a plan that would assure continuation to avoid any changes a year out. We do not have a specific recommendation to share with you. I believe that would be premature to do that because we've made no decisions other than the fact that if this is something that is of interest to you, that we make a commitment to finding those resources. And so I want to state that, but I also just want to close with one other piece. This is being advanced for educational design reasons, educational policy reasons. I feel this is best for our kids in terms of not disrupting their instruction. It allows one class to go to one class as opposed to splitting children up. But I also want you to know that I believe this intent is responsive to concerns that have been raised in bargaining with our teachers association about the delivery of instruction in the areas of art, music, physical education, and reach. I can tell you that in our discussions, without getting into all the details, because I don't think that's the intent here tonight, that should this be supported, that in this bargaining process, that we do have agreement that other things won't be advanced by MTI as a result of this. And I think that is being responsive in terms of, you know, how we work through the bargaining process. In other words, this resolves several issues that we're dealing with in that context. First and foremost, what I've listened to from you as a board team and members of the educational community, teachers and parents, is that we're advancing an idea around, you know, educational practice, but it also has that benefit in terms of resolving issues that we have in the bargaining process, and I want to be very clear about that. It's not the sole reason, but it clearly is a reason. So with that, we'll respond to any questions you have.
Ms. Passman.
I don't have any questions. This is a very proud moment for me as a member of this board to look at a situation that was wrong and to be able to, by some incredible means of financial whatever, to right it for our teachers and our students. And I thank the superintendent. I thank Mr. Cass for all the work they put into this. And this is going to be, I think, going down one of my best nights on the board as far as I'm concerned. So that's all I'm going to say.
Any other questions on those amendments? Ms. Moss?
Yeah, I want to also say thank you to Mr. Cass and Dr. Nierad for all the work they put into this and for listening to the board members. And I really also do appreciate it very much. I have one question, and this is it really doesn't have anything to do with the amendment. It just happens to be one of the words in the sentence. that is, I know a couple of years ago we had a long discussion about reach, and I think reach is different in all the schools. And I was just wondering, what will that affect? Will that affect the library in every school? Will that affect the computer classes? Or what exactly do you guys know the exact effects of that?
Yeah, well, you certainly have targeted the right areas in the question, and what this will do is it eliminate any class and a half for the instruction of reach as well. And mainly that's been around educating our elementary children in technology areas and in learning about how to use the computers appropriately. Sue, are there any additional things that could be added to that? Yeah, so there is some variation on that.
Were you referencing will the library and reach change?
No, I was just wondering if this would restore the one class going to the library at one time, the one class going to the computer class at one time. Okay, great. Thank you.
It would.
Do we want to discuss all of the amendments so we make sure we have all the information on the table before we vote to move this forward, or do we want to do them one at a time? I think this is probably an easy one.
Yeah, this is slam dunk right here. I'd like to move the first option, all schools, adding back art, music, physical education, and reach to full classes instead of class and a half at all 32 schools at a cost of $1,280,713. $700,000 coming from TIF and $580,713 coming from the fund balance.
Okay, could you just be specific that you're moving it to the full board meeting either on the 6th or the 11th for vote?
Just what you said.
Second.
Okay, and any further questions? And to make this clear to the many people that are watching, this is moving this forward to either the May 6th meeting or the May 11th meeting when we vote on the entire budget. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And that is passes 7-0. Ms. Cole, would you like to take us through your two amendments?
Both amendments are sort of related. So why don't we work backwards, and we'll start with Amendment 2, which is in regards to culturally relevant resource staff. I wanted to have discussion on including 4 FTE for cultural relevant resource staff to train with Andrea Davis, and this would be funded by the allocation of the strategic plan money that was set aside in the superintendent's budget. Any comments or questions?
Reena, just explain it for discussion and questions, and then.
I don't think we need to make a motion.
Go ahead, Ms. Passman.
Still a little confused. Are you still going for Amendment 1? Are you still interested in Amendment 1? So we should speak to the possibility of that happening, Amendment 1?
If you want, we can take on both. They're both related to the culturally relevant curriculum instructors. The reason why I had one, it's like 0.5 FTE out of teaching and learning, is in general it kind of goes back to the elementary, what we've just done with elementary. And we've had a discussion, or the public has had this discussion, and I think it's something that we need to address, which is if we address cultural relevant curriculum and instructional teachers, then we're not addressing another issue, which is TAG. Mm-hmm. And what I would like to see is us get to a point where we discuss the fact that sometimes the only way to get kids of color to be in TAG is to have teachers that are aware and trained in this issue. And so I would think that when we get to a point where we're actually doing this work, that we have someone that is trained in both, that somehow is part of teaching and learning, because that's where we have TAG now. And the other reason why that I was taking it out of the reading is probably more philosophically than anything, but it's that I've seen many IRTs go into elementary ed over the past year, and I want that to continue, but generally when you put that much resources into the schools, sometimes it means that there's an ease up in the need for that many reading people in teaching and learning. And the problem I always have as a board member is that while I know that teaching and learning is integral for professional development, I don't always understand what people in teaching and learning are doing, and I can't really see end results. And I can give you an example, which is something that I hear all the time is report cards. Report cards was going to be done, it was going to be rolled out, and it kind of hit a lot of bumps in the road. And so that was put on by teaching and learning, and I'm not trying to put one department against another. I'm just trying to explain what was going through my mind. The reason why I feel strongly that we need to at least have a discussion about the cultural relevant resource staff is that this is something we've been trying to address now, not just in this strategic plan, but prior plans. And it's an area that we cross over and over again, which is our kids that are African-American are just so far behind when we look at standardized tests that it just, it's bothersome. And I think we need to make steps. We need to move forward and do something. We're kind of know what's coming up, and what's coming up is that we're going to lose a lot of teachers of color in the next few years. And so what is our strategy going to be to reach out and connect with these kids that so desperately need us? So that was my thinking.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I thank you, Ms. Cole, for bringing us back to a lot of important things in the district, and one of them is, of course, our tax program. But we're going to have that come in front of us in June. And the other one is the cultural relevance, which I know we're all in tune with. But that's something that I think has to come after the strategic plan. These are very, very important points, and I'm very glad that you brought them to our attention. And I hope we will continue to follow these two very important issues. But I think for both, I would prefer to wait until after the strategic plan. For all we know, when we see a culturally relevant curriculum come in front of us, we may be actually offering them less here than they should get. We don't know what it's going to be, and especially tags. And then I have to put in my personal little thing here, for reading recovery. You take somebody out of reading recovery, we have to come up with something else. Because these children are the lowest children in terms of their abilities to learn how to read, and they have to be covered somewhere, some way. So, and I think the people in reading recovery have been diminished as it is. And I've seen this program in action as a teacher, and it meant a great deal to me for the children and for the children in my class to have it. So I'd hate to take it out of that. And even though we don't want to pit one group against the other group, somehow it comes down to it. I would love our miracle worker over here to come up with a way where we don't have to. He's looking around. Not to you, Jim. to come up with it so we don't have to take it from one department again, you know, to another department. Are you consulting out there? You have muses that I have? Okay. So those are my opinions, but I thank you for emphasizing them because I think they're very important. Discussion.
I would agree with Ms. Passman. I think this is very important. I feel the need to stick with the strategic planning process and not start evaluating things before we even see the strategic plan, because I don't know how else, if there's other ways this is there's going to be recommendations that this is addressed, you know, versus other things. And I personally would feel uncomfortable allocating majority of the strategic plan, a good part of the strategic planning money, before as a board we see the strategic plan. And so mine is more of a timing issue than an issue on the culturally relevant curriculum. I just, you know, there's a lot of other things that people are proposing in the plan, and I think we owe it to the process to have it laid out there and then have further discussion. Ms. Mathiak? Oh, I'm sorry. Or Mr. Winston was.
I guess here's my thing, and this is part one, is I agree that I am very interested to see what comes forward in the strategic plan, because it's been clear that that process has brought to light concerns about achievement gaps and developing the schools that really include and respond to every child in the school, not just some kids in the school. I think the intent is very good. There are a couple of things, if and when this comes back to us, that I would also hope to see. Where I get stuck is what exactly these FTEs would be doing if we approved them. Are you taking it as, and these are sort of rhetorical questions, but would we take it as a given that the model that was put forward by Dane County United is the model that we adopt? What do people have to tell us about that model? I have very mixed feelings about the focus on cultural relevance, in part because when I was part of a group of parents of African American kids that were meeting with the principal at East, at one point somebody asked, "What is it that you want?" And we went around the room and everybody said what we wanted. And cultural relevance was not what people were asking for. They were saying, "We want you to raise the expectations for our children. We don't want to have to fight to get them into advanced classes. We want you to expect them to achieve and then give them what they deserve academically." So I think there's a much bigger discussion about all of the pieces that come into play that I'm hoping to see some guidance out of the strategic planning process. But I also think before we go to this model, I'd like to have some larger discussions that draw in a number of perspectives on, I know even as I talk to my friends in the Black community, there is not unanimity on this model. Some people are very for it, other people not so much. And so I think we're not there yet. Do I think it's important to address this? Absolutely. Those would be my reservations. How would this fit with a whole larger set of issues from the experience a family has the moment it walks into the door of our schools to what teachers and counselors see and expect when a child comes in? The degree to which what we're dealing with as an achievement gap is about race and the degree to which it's about poverty, which I think the latest WKCE scores really emphasize. So we've got, and again, I'm not sure who's going to be chairing what committees, but I would hope that this would be something that, as the strategic plan comes forward, the Education and Performance Committee would take up and help the board think through this, and then also think through what would be measures of success. What would we be looking to achieve? What would we hope to see as a result of these? I know we've got some very talented people. Andre L. Davis is a gem, and we're very, very lucky. But what do we want to have from these people who would be working with them? So that's sort of where I'm at with it. I'm not ready to commit, but I appreciate that you brought this forward.
Mr. Winston?
Yes, thank you very much. Ms. Cole, thank you for providing this budget amendment, just because I think it's important that we keep it fresh in our minds regarding these topics. And I had a question for Superintendent, if you can answer, or Dr. Abladab. Mm-hmm. In terms of reading recovery, one of our meetings that we had with Ms. Cole and I for the committee, there, I believe, were three schools that don't have reading recovery at all. And didn't know if that, there you go, just get the high side. Okay. Just wondering if in this budget at all, was that factored at all in the budget in terms of changing that? Again, I can't remember the three schools, but it was a very spirited conversation. But the fact of the matter is that if three schools don't have reading recovery and you have students there who are struggling, then there is nothing, and or very little. And so I'm just wondering if this budget at all looked at that, and I'm very sorry that I didn't ask that in terms of a budgetary question.
There are three schools that do not have reading recovery. Van High, Shorewood, I'm lost on the last one. I think it's Kennedy. It might be Elvium. It is Elvium. So those are the three schools. The two teacher leader positions for reading recovery are part of the model of reading recovery to monitor regularly and to work with the university in partnership to preserve the 14.5 positions that we have in reading recovery. And we met with a professor at the university, Kathy Compton Lilly, and we talked to her about our model and asked her for just some advice as we're beginning to look at researching the effectiveness of it, and she had suggested that we do need to keep the two teacher leaders with the number of positions that we have available in the district.
And I would just add that we did not add additional positions in this budget. So, although we're not necessarily opposed to at some point looking at that.
Well, just one. So how do, if you are a struggling student at Van High, Shorewood, or Elmium, what do you get if you're not reading? And maybe you have data that shows that nobody's struggling at those three schools, which mm-hmm. would be wonderful. But just wondering again, how do those students receive services?
They receive services through their classroom teacher. And we have part-time coaches in each of those buildings right now, so the coaches go into the classrooms and help the teachers through modeling, but the coaches do not provide direct services. It's support in that process. But those schools do not have reading recovery, so the children aren't served in a reading recovery capacity there. And we serve 8 children in first grade in a reading recovery for every 1.0 reading recovery teacher a year. And sometimes we serve more than that because students exit out and we bring another 4 children in.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Ms. Moss, followed by Ms. Mathiak.
Thank you. I think this is a great discussion. Thank you, Mr. Winston, for bringing up reading recovery, and also Ms. Cole for bringing this up for discussion, because I think whenever anything's brought out on the table for discussion, it's really important, and it gets the message out that we are thinking about it, because people can't read our minds. So I appreciate that. I would also really not be in favor of cutting reading recovery. I think that after what Dr. Aplanep said, I think I've already seen several sessions and seen how the children respond, and talk to many teachers who think that it is a very effective means of teaching children to read. So, and I also, I was just thinking about some of the decisions that we're making right now. And 2 years ago in our budget deliberations, we made some kind of last minute decisions as far as FTEs and changing programs. And I would really, for me, taking a more deliberate, collaborative approach at this point is really, really important, because I guess I'm a little gun shy now of making decisions without talking to the greater community. And I feel like we do need to do something for our TAG program. And the culturally relevant curriculum was the focus of conversation of many of the strategic planning meetings. So I fully expect to see something come up about that. But I'd really trust Dr. Nair, the way Dr. Nair kind of manages things. I really appreciate the mindful planning and then coming back to us with ideas, and then we collaborate, we talk it out, and then we all seem to come up with some pretty good, I think we've come up with some pretty good decisions this year. So that's where I stand right now. So
thank you. Ms. Mathiak, Ms. Cole, Mr. Hughes.
I would welcome a review of reading recovery and a decision about future investment. We are talking about it as if it's the only model for working with students with reading difficulties, and in fact, it is far from the only model. And in fact, a staff member of this district a few years ago did a very comprehensive report that sort of showed that reading recovery costs a whole lot and doesn't help as much as other programs. I realized that the university has a nice reading recovery center funded by the people who champion reading recovery. What a shocking development. And I would hate to see that become part of our discussion, because frankly, it's not neutral information. I think we need to find out, especially since we have some schools that are not using it. Unless something has changed at Lapham, Lapham used to have 2 programs. One was reading recovery and the other was more of a phonetic traditional reading program, and I think we need to start looking back at that value-added data to say, is this working? Reading recovery has some very nice things to it, but I think it would be naive to imagine that students who graduate out of it are prepared to go on and advance as readers. And I say that as a mother of a child who was an exemplary reading recovery student. The reading came when he got the speech and language therapy he needed, because he could not recognize phonemes. So I think, it's part of a bigger question, and I'm not comfortable saying every school should have it no school should have it until we know what it's costing us, is it the most effective method, and what other models are out there and being used.
Just as a comment, we are in the process of doing a study on reading recovery. We've been working on this for about a half a year, and we hope to have something to you by the fall.
And is the university reading recovery funded group working on that study?
Yes, they're working on it with us.
Isn't that a conflict of interest, since part of what they do is promote reading recovery?
No, Kathy Compton Lilly came to two meetings to clarify the national data for us. That's what we wanted, clarification of national data.
I guess I would also like to see some other experts from the UW who are not affiliated with that center look at the data and tell us what they see.
Ms. Cole, followed by Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on just a couple points because I've taken enough time. But in regards to the reading recovery, it's that thing where I'm just trying to get my mind wrapped around the resources and how many kids we're reaching. So I too have heard about a study that the district did, and I'm not sure where it is, but it was several years ago. And but I do remember that someone telling me that our teachers, and I've seen this anecdotally, that a lot of our staff already uses a lot of reading recovery rubric or standards or whatever while they're teaching kids. My concern is that we're not reaching enough kids, and that one FTE to eight kids, while I want them to get resources, and I've seen staff say to me, it's not enough. We have more kids that we need to reach, and that's what I'm mostly concerned with, is that we look at this, take another look at it and find out what our options are, because we need to be reaching all those kids. And I do think that that we're part of a whole national trend, which is, how do you teach reading, and do you talk about phonics? And so I just think that's very important. The other thing that I wanted to get back to was the strategic planning and the culturally relevant instructors. And by no means do I know what it would look like, and I have an idea. And one thing is that I just get concerned that we put a lot of expectations on the back of one person, Andrea L. Davis, and I really am concerned that at some point she's just going to burn out. It's a lot to ask, and that she took the job, But it feels like a lot to ask, because there's a lot riding on it and when you look at the district in general. And the other thing is that I appreciate what Ms. Masayak said about expectations when she was talking about her experience, because I do not look at this as something that we're trying to engage the kids that don't want to go to school. This is to engage all kids at all levels, so that we can move everybody up, not just reach the bottom stereotype. And finally, it's so that we can have this conversation. And there's some confusion in my mind, because I know that we placed these markers where we said we're going to do fine arts and math. And one of the reasons why was because if we don't put a marker, then we may not get to it in 1 or 2 years. And so my whole reason for this conversation is, are we making a guarantee that we're going to get to this in less than 1 or 2 years? That, and I don't know, because I've never gone through a strategic plan, but, I'd appreciate the superintendent kind of answering that, because money doesn't come out of nowhere. and it gets really, and then you need 5 votes. And so I have that nervousness that that it couldn't happen. So how would that look if we wanted to do something? Would it come out of strategic planning or that fund? And what if it needed to be more? I just want to get your thoughts.
Well, if I could, my thoughts would be that the strategic plan would be completed and presented to you, allowing you to have a much better sense of the totality of the directions being recommended. So I think that that's an appropriate way to go. From that point forward, I think it could work either of two ways. One is that in line with what Ms. Mathiak said earlier in terms of if we have a plan, will you bring it back? So, you know, we could bring it back, or it doesn't prevent any of you from initiating a recommendation at a point in time as well. Then it would be after the entire plan is placed before you. So I think those are the two main ways it'll come forward. I do intend, absent any other input that you know you want to provide me as a board, once we have the plan before you, and if these funds are available, I will make some recommendations to you relative to those, you know, the funding that is in the budget.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes, thank you. I'll be brief because, as is so often the case, I agree with almost everything Ms. Mathiak says about the need to assess the programs that are being proposed. I don't think we should short-circuit the process, the strategic planning process. I'm uncomfortable about using the budget process or amendment process to eliminate positions that we really don't have an idea of what they do now and whether they're needed and what the cost is if we do eliminate them. And with the culturally relevant instruction, I think we do have to, when that is a part of the curriculum, part of the strategic plan, and when it comes before us, I think we do need to really look at what we are seeking to accomplish and what evidence do we have that what's being proposed will actually achieve what we want for it. I know that we all want to get to the same place, and there's a real question about what's the best way to do that. So I hope that we'll take the time to look at that and think about it in a careful way. And the same thing with reading recovery. I think that I believe that it works wonderfully well for many students, but we do need to see how cost-effective it is. So I am happy to hear that we will have further information on that in the next several months.
Ms. Passman.
Yeah, I welcome the study too. The one that I read a couple of years ago, I think, had some very serious flaws in it because we had put some teachers into reading recovery that didn't officially, not officially trained in the New Zealand method. And the data that I, and obviously the results may be skewered by that, the fact that they didn't have the full training that they should have. I certainly admit there's no one program that's going to work for every child. I mean, that's a given. I think we know that now. So I would like very carefully for us to look at those teachers who have been trained and those teachers who have not or are trying to pick it up or shouldn't be doing it, et cetera. So I'm a little worried about cost-effective programs and losing kids in the process of that because we could take that. We obviously have to consider that. I'm not going to deny that. But I just don't want to lose, you know, anybody in that. Obviously, you've heard from me as a teacher and how I think of it. But certainly we need a study that will verify what I'm thinking or not. And if it's not, then we need to do something. Yep. Okay.
Any further discussion on Ms. Cole's two amendments? Are you going to make a motion to move those forward or no? Okay. Nothing. Does anyone else have any other amendments they'd like to add? Ms. Mathiak?
Yet another shocking development. A hush falls over the crowd. I want to thank Ms. Cole for a number of things, including asking the question about what it would cost to reinstate the Ready, Set, Go conferences. As I have talked with parents and staff and community groups, there are a couple of things that have really stood out. One of them, the board has obviously rallied behind, and that was that the class and a half decision in 07-08 just was not a good decision and hasn't worked well, and there were some valiant efforts, but we need to change that. The other one is that people really feel like we lost something very important when we let go of Ready, Set, Go conferences. And when I saw the dollar amount involved in reinstating them, I thought, you know, we could do this. We could do this.
Could you repeat the dollar amount out loud for people watching?
Okay. According to the document that was Q17 formulated in response to board question in parents MC, Maya Cole. Assuming a 3% increase in salaries each year up to the 2009-10 school year, the overall cost to reinstate the program would be $91,003. That's a tiny little amount of money. I mean, it's a big amount of money that we could accomplish a lot with. And as Mr. Cass knows and others know, I've noticed that when we pass our monthly bills each month, we do have something called Elan purchasing card purchases. And each month, it's around $100,000 to $150,000, sometimes even more. So guessing that the average per month is $150,000 per month, that's about $1.8 million a year. Could we not, Mr. Cass, find savings in how we're using those cards to come up with $91,000 so that kids and their parents and teachers could have Ready, Set, Go conferences? You ever see the movie Dave?
And Donna can jump in here, too. The problem with that is those P cards go directly to, you know, these formula budgets and people's budgets to buy supplies and materials and things like that throughout the school year. So really, as I think about this on the spot, your suggestion, and correct me if I'm wrong, would be to go into, you know, formula type allocation budgets and reduce an amount to equal the $91,000.
That's correct. And you would know from looking at how and where the money's being spent whether there is a part of the budget where, or of the administration, people who use these cards, where it would make more sense. Or, I mean, again, distributed $91,000 over $1.8 million is not a lot.
Superintendent? I would not disagree with you.
And again, I think, you know, what's, you know, and as you know, this is an area that I'm interested in because it may be that as there's more looking at this, that some of those supplies might be better purchased under a state purchasing contract or some other mechanism. I don't know that, but I do believe that $91,000 over $1.8 million distributed, just averaged out, would not be an excessive burden. I would leave it to you and Donna and the people in business services to figure out a fair way to do this, but again, $91,000 for something that would affect all of our schools and all of our families, and something that, again, I hear from everybody, they would love to get back. I think this is one where we could step up and maybe work on it.
I think if I could make a suggestion, and not trying to one-up anyone, but we're doing an analysis on our P cards right now, and we're currently not in a plan that offers a rebate, and the most popular plans offer a rebate. So taking an assumption that you could get a 1% rebate, which I don't think is out of the ordinary, that would be $180,000. So I would look at doing something like that rather than put panic out into people's lives that I'm going to take $91,000 from their budget and look into a scenario of trying to creatively, you know, get a rebate around what we spend rather than going into people's budgets as a suggestion.
Okay, thank you. And again, I leave it to, because you're the closest to the ground level numbers and you know where there are possibilities. But again, what I know is that it means a lot to our schools and to the success of our students. And so I would move that we, when we meet to approve the budget, that we also approve an amendment that would reinstate Ready, Set, Go conferences with savings from, in whatever form, from the Elan purchasing cards.
Can I ask a question about the Title I stimulus money? I'm a big advocate of Ready, Set, Go conferences.
Somebody has to make a second.
Second.
Oh, you made it. Was that a motion?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a discussion then. Can we, would we be able to use the Title I stimulus money at the Title I schools to, for part of that?
Here's what I would like to do, if this is agreeable, is I would like to have us pursue the option that I heard here, and I would also like the benefit of looking at any other options that we could come up with, including that one. So, you know, I don't want to say yes and not knowing fully if that could be used, but with the understanding that we will look in a variety of places to accommodate that need. I very much support these types of conferences at the beginning of the school year. They can go a long way to establishing the kind of communication that's needed to help kids with their learning and help parents understand what's going to happen in school. So I would like to, if you're agreeable, to Eric and I will work to identify, look at that method and any others that we could, and come back with a recommendation.
Ms. Passman?
The only thing I'm upset about is that I didn't think of this. Because this is really good. This is great. And it's a wonderful way to start off the year and get the parents into the classroom. And I remember getting a tremendous turnout of parents, parents that you might not see the rest of the year. It's just great. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Ms. Colton.
Okay, any further discussion? Ms. Cole?
This just goes to show you there's never a dumb question that you should always, because, and as you can tell, I'm willing to put it out there that I don't know everything. And I just want to say thank you to everyone, because I can see that there's some support with this. And Ms. Mathiak, the brains, always comes up with an answer. And I too, just want to say that this is not just something that we put out there because we think it's a great idea and we're tied to it. I've heard consistently from staff, from teachers, principals, parents, and also this ties into something that Ms. Moss and I worked on last year, which is she worked on communications with the community, and I worked on parent involvement, and this ties into communicating and involving people the first day, and so it's very important, and thank you.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the Ready, Set, Go amendment is brought forward to the full board meeting. Is it go or goal? I see G-O?
G-O.
G-O-A-L? I see it both ways.
Ready, Set, Go. G-O. But you set goals,
didn't you? Yeah, some schools have it as Ready, Set, Goal. Yeah, it's just different. Okay. Are there any other amendments? Sure.
You know, this is really a rather incredible evening. We're not talking about taking things away. We are actually talking about putting things in.
Do you have
it? All right.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Winston has an amendment.
Sorry. Well, here's my amendment. I don't know if anybody saw the question. I had asked the question in terms of what is the mileage rate for district administrators? And the average mileage per month for a principal or an assistant superintendent. And the IRS rate is 55 cents per mile. One of the things I think about, I see you guys all the time talking about my colleagues on the school board, doing a lot of things in the community and really reaching out to people, which I think we should be doing. Absolutely. No question about it. But there comes a cost with that. Your families, your car, all those kinds of things. And one of the things that I was talking with my tax person this year, and he's like, oh, you serve on the school board. Oh, that's nice and everything. Well, you know, what is your mileage? I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, your mileage, you know, well, what you do for the school board, you know, you should be able to deduct, and, you know, it's part of your job. And I couldn't tell him anything. I don't know if we claimed anything, but just I do believe that there needs to be a set-aside amount of money for board members to produce some sort of document that says, this is what I did for the school board in this given month, and that it's, in essence, at 55 cents per mile. I I think we should do that. And obviously, you need to develop some sort of policy and things like that. And I think, you know, I think we could do that. I think, you know, we have our attorney, along with the district staff and even board members, could put things into the equation in terms of a policy. But just doing the simple math, you know, $60 per month, 12 months a year, 7 board members, $5,040. And I know that, you know, our colleagues on the Common Council and on the Dane County Board of Supervisors make a lot more than we do, folks. And I know that none of us here are doing this for the money, but I don't think that you should, in essence, we should be, you know, I mean, we, and I know everybody here gives to community organizations and things like that, but, you know, I think there is, you know, I think there is something to being able to, you know, recoup some of the money back that, you know, to, for doing this community service. So my budget amendments would be for $5,040. I don't know where that would come from. And I'm not even going to pretend to wave my magic wand to find it or whatever. But I know, I'm sure somewhere, somehow, some, you know, somewhere there's $5,040 to, you know, be able to recoup some mileage for serving on the school board. Just wondering how other people feel about that.
Ms. Mathiak?
I sort of agree, and I think one of the unseen pieces that we see is that survey of school board compensation, which is just depressing. I don't know that there has been an increase in compensation for this board in the last 20 years. So, yeah, I'm aware of those pieces. The one thing that I'm intrigued by the mileage thing, on the other hand, it's not clear to me whether we would have to declare that as income, at which point you're doing, you know, for me, I'm not a record keeper in that manner. I'm much better at, you know, chewing on other people for their record keeping. So, you know, that's the part that, you know, I would be open to a discussion of compensation, just flat out changing the compensation. So that, because at a certain point, we are paying to do public service. These are not paid positions. We're paying to do this.
Mr. Hughes.
We can still deduct it. You can deduct all your travel expenses at the 55 cent an hour or mile rate. I'm not offering legal advice here, but I think that's I think it's certainly the case.
I didn't know that. As long as you record your mind.
Yeah. But, you know, but at least you have that. But at least you'd have the documentation.
Well, you can do the documentation.
Well, I'm talking about in a more of a formal way to, you know, to maybe receive a check every month to say, okay, well, like, at least, you know, and you know, the issue with this is that it won't even come close to what you put in your gas tank. I look at what many of the board members do. Just in terms of, you know, I see the newspapers and I, you know, hear things and hear where people were involved in different community events. And, you know, I hope people in this community know how hard, you know, the board is working. And, you know, and I think obviously a night like tonight, you know, this is celebration time because, again, this is, I believe, my sixth budget. And, you know, it's never been like this. You know, we've never been. Yeah, this is wonderful. Yeah. In March, but I tell you, you talk about being jealous. So coming on the board, no budget cuts, things like that. So I guess you know, one of the things again, I want to put forth this as again is strictly as a mileage situation. I do agree with Ms. Mathiak. I do believe that in the future, the board needs to look at in terms of the compensation here does need to come close to our colleagues on the county board and the city council. But, you know, I'm not ready to put that forth as a budget amendment tonight, but I do believe that, again, in terms of mileage, I think that's something that, you know, we should discuss further in terms of policy, and then obviously placehold that somehow in the budget somewhere.
Ms. Moss?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I wasn't quite finished.
I'm sorry.
I've sat at some of the budget hearings when people have come and talked about the stresses they're going through financially, and I would have a hard time personally going out and telling the community that we decided to vote for more money for ourselves, no matter what it's for. So I would have a hard time supporting any additional payment for us.
Ms. Moss, followed by Ms. Passon.
Yeah, you know, I would agree that we do spend a lot more of our own money than the $300 a month covers. So I don't know about you guys, but one thing, and I also don't know about voting in an increase, because I don't know if that would really make even a dent. So, but I do think that we need to think about the issue of who can serve on this board, because I think that the issue of compensation makes it impossible for some people even to consider being on the school board, because it is a huge time commitment and there is a financial commitment. So that's something that I don't know if it's something for this budget, but I think it's something for, I think, the community to think about and for the board to think about, that opening it up to a more diverse population would be something we should think about.
Ms. Passman?
I guess I have to agree with Ed, but thank you for thinking of us. And, it's reminded me that I'll go home now and tell my husband that every time I visit a school, I'm taking the Prius. So that should be helpful. I can't see us in this economic time actually asking for more money. And the expensive thing about being in the board is also running for it. I mean, that's an enormous expense and keeps people out of the running. So when the people start talking about public funding for this, we could go there too. And I would love for that to happen as well. But it's the wrong economic time to do this right now. It just is, as far as I'm concerned.
Ms. Cole?
Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Winston, for bringing this issue to the board. I agree that this may not be the economic time, but I think that what I'm hearing from Ms. Moss and Mr. Winston, that this might be a good time for us to look at this as a policy. And one idea that came to me was that some boards that are a lot smaller, when you look at WASB, they actually go out and have one night where they explain to people how to run for the board and what the job of the board is and so forth. And this could be part of that larger conversation, because Ms. Mathiak's right, and I don't think this is really a discussion about us, because we're up here and we recognize that we're paying to be on the board. I think that the bigger conversation is that it does eliminate a subset of people in the community that are just as noble and would volunteer time to do this job, and they won't be able to do it because of the structure. And you could say that that's the same way with the United States Senate. And but gosh, too bad. But I guess I would rather figure out a way that we could have a discussion as a board of where we would like to go with this, because we do kind of look at fuel and mileage when it comes to transporting kids. And at the same time, you make a great point, which is that we are getting out in the community more. Today, I was on the far west side, and then I was on the far east side, and then I drove home, and then I did a lot of driving today, which I am not organized enough to take it off of my taxes. But I do think about that stuff. And when communities, organizations come to me, it's not to get my autograph. It's always to get my check. And at some point, I feel like I can't be that great board member that writes a check for a certain amount of money just simply because I don't have it. You know, I have three kids and a dog. And they suck up all my... Yeah. And so... I know we have a lot on our plate, and I do worry about putting it on as an amendment, but I understand what you're saying as the gas mileage. So I guess that's it.
You know, recently we've had board members talk about phones. We've had, you know, the need for printers, the discussion on mileage. There's been discussions offline about salary. Maybe it's best to go back and look at a broader way of maybe it comes down to a policy or, different ways things, can be done to help people. I don't know if there are, options that would also be helpful, that maybe some things that we consider as well. We started to have that conversation last week, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on.
Well, my thought is you have a policy. It has not been revised for a long time. And I think, that could be a good place to have this conversation about the ideas you've discussed tonight, and also maybe to look at some of the comparable data that's available. I'm not suggesting any specific change because that's your prerogative, but I can tell you that just looking at a policy with that kind of data on it, and I think it should be looked at. I think that would be a good context for you to consider different ideas.
Ms. Mathiak, Mr. Winston.
Yeah, again, I think there are a number of factors that come in, and and some of them are just really basic, and I'm saying this for the people who, are going to be talking about this on Vicki McKenna tomorrow about what a bunch of jerks we are because we're all talking about gimme, gimme, gimme. I didn't carry a cell phone continually until I was elected to the school board. I paid for that out of my own pocket. It's not cheap, and most of the time when I go over minutes, it's because I'm going over on school board business. I'm a state employee. Legally, I cannot use my state telephone to conduct board business, so I have to have a cell phone. There's not a lot of choice there if I want to make a call during the day. There is the mileage. There are the events that we are invited to and expected to appear at and that we pay for out of our own pockets. And that's all above and beyond the actual cost of running a campaign. So I would welcome a number of, and then there's the printing and the costs of maintaining an internet so I can receive material, or the cost. It's not cheap. We've been very economical. We've been lean and mean, but I also think that it is time to have a discussion about modernizing what we look at, maybe looking at asking WASB to help with providing information about what some of the standard pieces are with, what do districts provide for boards. We have the compensation survey, but are there other pieces that get done, and sort of look at a policy that would help us to do our job as board members without, I think, personally, it is a lot easier to look at it pretty magnanimously a year ago. But in these times when we're all being called on to do more for our families and for others, that money for the extra cell phone minutes, the money for the internet, the money, it does become an expense, and it becomes a very real expense. So I would just put that out there as something, we're not talking about giving ourselves $10,000 raises to go out and drink margaritas and, in little fancy cocktails. We're talking about basically covering the cost of serving the city. And I'd also add that in terms of what we do, there are no other offices in the city except for the mayor that are citywide. And that means our constituents are everywhere. We have unique roles. We're called upon to do a lot. We respond a lot. We meet a lot. and now this year with our liaison roles, we're out in the schools a lot. And, you know, I mean, for, I wouldn't have driven to work today. I would have taken the bus. But I knew I had a meeting that started at 5. And I had to go out to Nuestro Mundo during the day. There are choices we're all making, and I think it's not unreasonable to acknowledge that in a modest and pragmatic way so that, you know, it's true. I can afford to do this. I have a two-income family. We're professionals. We have good salaries. But I can imagine a whole lot of people who could not do that.
Mr. Winston?
Well, thank you for indulging the conversation. I thought about this long and hard. And quite frankly, I've thought about this probably for the last 3 years, honestly. And I just never, you know, again, you know, it's hard when you're talking about cutting, and then you say, oh, hey, give me some more money, you know. I know that's hard, but I think the conversation needs to be had. It truly does. Maybe not even for us as the board, but in the future. What's the board going to look like in the future? And what position are they going to, in essence, be in? Not even just as a school district, but just, again, on the board. And again, I appreciate the conversation. And know that we need to talk more about it. And this, I don't believe, is a selfish thing to do this. I think there's an education in the community that needs to happen. I can't tell you how many times I've stepped off a big red fire truck, and somebody's like, what are you doing here? Well, I'm working. Oh, you're on the school. You're the school board. So they think I'm, like, one of the staff, one of the administrators, a principal or something like that. And, no, I'm a firefighter. I just serve on the school board. And you're you know, trying to educate people like that. And then when you really get down to it and you tell people, you know, I've received $4,200 to serve. And they're like, you are crazy. You know. So anyway, so I put that out there. I guess I would, at this time, I didn't make a motion on this, did I? No, okay. What I would like is at least to find out where people want to go with this from here. I'm more than happy to make a motion in terms of the mileage. But if people want to go deeper than that and talk about other issues, I'm more than happy to take that step back and say, okay, well, let's talk about the bigger issues and then move it forward that way. So that it's just not about mileage. But I'd like to know where we're going, know with this.
Ms. Cole?
Well, I like what the superintendent was kind of alluding to, which was the policy issue. And looking at the policy starting there and then seeing where that goes, you know, with the understanding that we're going to follow up. I was smiling because I was thinking, We're such a great board because we don't sneak policy into our budget documents, and I just think that that's really good governance when you don't change policy when you're dealing with budgets. So that said, like, you know, certain things that are coming up. Anyway, I think I would go with asking the superintendent to follow up with this and get back to us.
Anybody else want?
Yeah, I would welcome a bigger discussion. If this, you know, if it's going to be 5,000 or 10,000, and we have a discussion, so choose to go this way in, you know, August or September, I think we could probably find a way to find that kind of money. Yeah. Right, Eric? I'd move that we zero out Eric's Elan purchasing cards and give ourselves a big bunch of goodies.
And please note, Eric, I did not put you on the spot.
I know there are other desires by board members for other types of things, and maybe we should have that as a bigger part of the conversation.
just as long as I knew what people are thinking and or not thinking too. I think one of the things that, you know, here is also an opportunity to talk to your friends, colleagues, people who are that surround us to get to gauge how they feel. And again, you know, not trying to hide anything here. This is the reality that as 7 elected board members face. And, you know, and again, do people know what our, in essence, our salaries are and what we do have to put into this to make our roles do what it does. So, but thank you for the conversation. I appreciate it.
So you're going to wait for a bigger discussion?
I will wait with bated breath. Is that what you say? I don't know. It's something. You know. But I will wait, and I will camp out in the superintendent's office and talk to Dan and Malin and all that, and you know, try to get something happening. Yeah.
It's okay. Any other amendments? Okay, so for the next steps, for those who are watching, we had 2 amendments moved to our next budget meeting. One would be to eliminate class and a half in our SAGE schools. I'm just splitting it in the way I'm describing it. And then for the non-SAGE schools to not implement it, but also address the K-1 math and literacy blocks. So just a little bit of different nuance, I guess. And then to reinstate the Ready, Set, Go conferences. We have our committee meetings in this building at 5 o'clock on Monday, May 4th. There will be public speaking. If anyone would like to come and address the amendments or the budget, they're welcome to come to that meeting to speak. On Wednesday evening, on May 6th at 6 o'clock, we have our official budget hearing where you'd also be able to speak on the amendments or the budget, and that again would be 3 minutes per speaker, or we are always very happy to read your emails at comments@madison.k12.wi.us. So we welcome any of your comments. Thank you all. With that, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And we are adjourned. And board, don't go anywhere.